again, and we're going to continue to look at a kind of a brief, although that's not true anymore, a brief overview of the book of Psalms here. We passed brief a long time ago, didn't we? Okay, let me just turn here real quick. Who remembers where we were last week, what psalm we looked at last week? Psalm 78, exactly right. And we saw in Psalm 78 that really it's God had established a testimony in Israel's history, and that testimony that He established was not primarily a reference just to the Ten Commandments, but that actually His history with them in the past is going to be repeated out there in the future, and that's the testimony. That's the pattern. What we're going to do this morning, I want to just real briefly touch on some things in Psalms 79, 80, 81, 82, and then and I want to spend most of our time in 83. Now, you think we can cover all that this morning or not? Yeah, right. Okay. So what I want to do then is look over to Psalm 79. We're going to just hit some highlights out of each of these. We're not going to look verse by verse through each of these psalms, but I do want you to notice some highlights here. And as we read this, remembering especially that Psalm 78 told us that God had established a testimony in Israel, and that things that happened to them in the past are going to be repeated out there in the future. At Psalm 79, let me start here and see if you can figure out what this might be speaking about prophetically. Psalm 79 starts out this way: O God, the heathen are come in to thine inheritance. Thy holy temple have they defiled. They have laid Jerusalem on heaps. The dead bodies of thy servants have they given to be meat unto the fowls of the heaven, the flesh of thy saints unto the beasts of the earth. Their blood have they shed like water round about Jerusalem, and there was none to bury them. We became a reproach to our neighbors, a scorn and a derision to them that are round about. How long, Lord, wilt thou be angry forever? Shalt thy jealousy burn like fire? Pour out thy wrath upon the heathen that have not known thee, and upon the kingdoms that have not called upon thy name. Okay, what does that sound like is going on there? What's that? That is what it is. Joseph said that sounds like, well, that's kind of a foreview of the tribulation period, and that is exactly what it is there. Now, if you will recall, look at Psalm 79, the very first verse, right above the very first verse, what do you see? Interesting, it says a psalm of Asaph. And who did we find that Asaph was? Who remembers who Asaph was? But he was a seer. He was a prophet. Excellent. In whose days? Anybody remember when? That's exactly right. He was a chief musician under the empire and kingdom of King David. And he was a seer as well. So not only was he responsible for the issue of music and singing, but as a seer, who knows what a seer was? Who remembers what a seer was? A prophet. This psalm is a prophecy of the future. Now, if you will recall, in the days of King David, was there a temple yet? There wasn't a temple yet, was it? When did the first temple come about? Now, they had the tabernacle, the tent, right? But when did the first temple come about? In Solomon. So what's interesting here, to think about this, this clearly, therefore, is a prophecy. Asaph is not declaring something that happened in his day. Because in Asaph's day, God's holy temple, here it says that they've come into thine inheritance, the holy temple have they defiled, they have laid Jerusalem on heaps. That's obviously a prophecy. That's not a declaration of what happened in Asaph's day. Okay? Now, if you'll hold that passage there and look all the way to Luke chapter number 21. Look over to Luke chapter 21. Look over to Luke and chapter number 21. Notice the statement here. In Luke chapter 21, the Lord Jesus Christ, when speaking about the tribulation period, here's something that He said at verse 20. Luke 21 and verse 20. It says, and when Christ says to the disciples here, and when ye shall see Jerusalem compassed with armies, then know that the desolation thereof is nigh. Then let them which are in Judea flee to the mountains, and let them which are in the midst of it depart out, and let not them that are in the countries enter thereinto, for these be the days of vengeance, that all things which are written may be fulfilled. Do you see the definite parallel with not only what you read there in Psalms 79, but even in Christ's day as He's declaring some of the details that are going to come to pass in the tribulation period? Jerusalem is going to be compassed about with armies. Keep that in mind if you would, okay, when we get to Psalms 83. Jerusalem is going to be compassed about with armies, and they are going to come in unto the inheritance. And if you'll turn back there to Psalm 79, Joseph, I notice you have your hand up in just a second. Or give me a second here. But look back to Psalm 79, and that's clearly what this is a prophecy about. He says, O God, I'm back at Psalm 79, verse 1. O God, the heathen are come in unto thine inheritance. Thy holy temple have they defiled. They have laid Jerusalem on heaps. The dead bodies of thy servants have they given to be meat unto the fowls of the heaven, the flesh of thy saints unto the beasts of the earth. Their blood have they shed like water round about. I mean, it's utter slaughter that's going on there in Jerusalem. You see that? And so when you make that comparison with Luke there, Christ clearly predicts that what they saw back here in the Old Testament is certainly going to come to pass. Joseph, you had a question or a comment?
Well, at that time, Jerusalem would be under the Antichrist rule.
Yes. His armies. They are the armies of the Antichrist. That's correct. And we're actually, that's such a great question. You mentioned for me to repeat the question, right? The question is, if Jerusalem is under control of the Antichrist by the time of the tribulation period, then whose armies are these that are coming in to destroy it? And it is the armies of the Antichrist. We'll see that actually here if we can get over to Psalms 83. We're going to get to there this morning, okay? Yes. The follow-up question is, has the remnant left before this? They're supposed to leave in the middle of the tribulation period, okay? So those that get out, got out. And those that didn't, yeah, their blood has been spilt and so forth, okay? Yes. 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 Okay, that's a great question. The question is, and the comment was first before the question, was that it seems like a lot of these prophecies have a historic fulfillment and a prophetic fulfillment. And is that consistent with all the prophecies? And as far as I can tell, yes. That there's a historic event. And that historic event is actually a small-scale picture of the prophetic event. And that is the pattern. That is the testimony. So when we saw last Sunday, Psalm 78 talks about He established a testimony in Jerusalem, in Jacob. That is the pattern. There is a small-scale event, such as the exodus out of Egypt, the destruction of the Egyptian empire and Pharaoh and their gods and so forth, the rescuing them, the redeeming of Israel, bringing them into their land. And that's a small-scale pattern of the big scale pattern that's going to happen out in times, okay? All right, so now quickly, if you would, so on your own study time, you can finish reading Psalm 78, all right? Finish reading Psalm 78. I just want you to get kind of a highlight there. But do you remember, let me read verse 2 again. I have to be careful as far as how much detail to go into right now because I really want to get to Psalms 83 this morning. Look at what it says at verse 2. The dead bodies of thy servants have they given to be meat unto the fowls of heaven. Now, does that sound like anything in the book of Revelation? What does it sound like, Jeff, in the book of Revelation? Remember? God is going to return the favor, in other words. If you look over to Revelation 19, this is the passage you were thinking of, right? Look at Revelation 19. Watch this. In Psalm 79, the dead bodies of the saints destroyed, of course, by the enemy, are left for the fowls to come and the birds of carrion are going to come and feast on those dead bodies. But God's going to return the favor. If you look over to Revelation 19 and look at what it says here at Revelation 19, this is when the Lord Jesus Christ returns, His actual literal return, all right? And it says at verse 14, Revelation 19, 14, the armies which were in heaven followed Him upon white horses, clothed in fine linen, white and clean. Out of His mouth goes a sharp sword. He smites the nations. Now watch what happens, verse 17, and I saw an angel standing in the sun. He cried with a loud voice, saying to all the fowls that fly in the midst of heaven, come and gather yourselves together unto the supper of the great God, that ye may eat the flesh of kings, the flesh of captains, the flesh of mighty men, the flesh of horses, and of them that sit on, and so on. See that how there's kind of returns the favor? Over in Psalm 79, it's the Antichrist has control and dominance. It appears like he's winning, and he leaves the bodies of the saints out there, and the birds of carrion come and feast on them. And God says, well, just give me a few more years, and then we'll have another supper. And so that's kind of an interesting turn of events there. Okay, all right, one other thing. If you look back to Psalm 79, verse 5. What's the question in verse 5? And then, we've already seen that question. What is the question? What's the cross-reference? Who remembers the cross-reference? Revelation 6 is exactly right. Revelation 6, it's the question that those who are slain are going to ask of the Lord. If you look at Revelation 6, verse 10, and you can see they're asking the same question. Revelation 6:10 says this, and these folks, by the way, they've already been slain. They're actually up under the altar in heaven. It says, and they cried with a loud voice, saying, how long, O Lord, holy and true, dost thou not judge and avenge our blood and them that dwell on the earth? And so on. So you've got the parallel there. So, again, I'm just giving you some highlights of your own personal study. You can go and read the surrounding verses to fill in the details, okay? Now, quickly go back to Psalms 80 now. Go back to Psalms chapter number 80. Nathan, did you have a question? Okay, I thought I saw a hand up. Look over to Psalms chapter number 80. Very interesting here. Okay, so Psalm 79, you've got the Antichrist has got dominance and control over Jerusalem and over the saints. It looks like he's winning. The believers are asking God how long. And the believers at the end of Psalm 79 are asking and pleading with God to come and return and rescue the redeemed and rescue and save His city. So now look at chapter 80. It says, give ear, O shepherd of Israel, thou that leadest Joseph like a flock, thou that dwellest between the cherubims, shine forth. Before Ephraim and Benjamin and Manasseh, stir up thy strength and come and save us. What's the plea? What's the call? What's the request here in Psalms 80? Help! You know, kind of a thing, Lord. Help! Now, it's very instructive here. The fact, look at the terminology here. He says, give ear, O shepherd of Israel. It's interesting, he doesn't say, give ear, O mighty man of war, like in Exodus 15, as Moses sings about God being a man of war. Rather, he describes him here as the shepherd of Israel. Why describe him as a shepherd? They're a scattered flock, and what's happening to the sheep? God, he's gathering them back, and they're being slaughtered, is what's happening. See that? Something else here. It says, give ear, O shepherd of Israel, thou that leadest Joseph like a flock. Well, that's interesting. Why does he say, thou that leadest Joseph like a flock? Why didn't he say, thou that leads Israel, or thou that leads Jacob, or what happened to the rest of the other 11 tribes? Why, thou that leadest Joseph? Any ideas on that one? Any thoughts on that? I'll give you an interesting cross-reference that will help. Go with me to Genesis 49. Genesis chapter number 49. Look what is said here about Joseph. Remember, Joseph was, of course, one of the 12 sons. Does anybody remember in order of birth where Joseph was? Second to the last. And who was the youngest? Benjamin was the youngest, okay? Joseph was sold into bondage by his brothers, at least 10 of them. And the possible exception was Benjamin and then Reuben, I think it was. I think it was Reuben that was trying to save him. Anyway, look at verse. So Genesis 49:22 says this. Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. By the way, this is when Jacob is speaking a prophecy about each one of his sons and their future as a tribe. Okay? Now, look at verse 23. The archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him. Unfortunately, that was his own brothers. But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands, here it is, of the mighty God of Jacob. Now look at the parentheses. From thence is the shepherd, and then you've got comma, the stone of Israel. See that? So it's interesting that when Asaph in Psalms 80 is singing this, "Give ear, O shepherd of Israel, thou that leadest Joseph," you can see he clearly is making that connection with Jacob's prophecy here in the book of Genesis about Joseph. That Joseph, his brothers were, the archers shot at him, but he prevailed because the hand of the Lord was with him. And the archers of the Antichrist are going to shoot at Israel, but Israel is going to prevail because the shepherd, the stone of Israel, is going to come and lead them forth. Isn't that fascinating how it does that there? It's one of the few times in the Old Testament, because it doesn't happen very often, but it's one of the few times in the Old Testament where when God is speaking about Israel, He speaks about Joseph. Okay, so real interesting information there. Did you have a question? Okay, let's move on. And look back over to Psalms 80. Look what else he does here. Look at verse 1 again, Psalms 80, verse 1. He says, "Give ear, O shepherd of Israel, thou that leadest Joseph like a flock, thou that dwellest between the cherubims." What's that mean, "thou that dwellest between the cherubims"? Okay, in the temple, the very glory of God was to dwell between the cherubims. And actually, in the presence of God out there in the third heavens and so forth, God actually does dwell between the cherubims, all right? So the pattern of things on the earth matched the reality of the things in the heavens. And when he says, "thou that dwellest between the cherubims," what's the significance of dwelling between the cherubims? What's anybody? Let me. What's that? It's the glory of God. What else? What else? Look over with me, if you would, to Revelation chapter number 4. Revelation chapter number 4, if you would. Let's do this kind of quickly. Revelation chapter number 4. What's the significance of this thing about dwelling between the cherubims? You want to get Revelation chapter 4 and you want to get Isaiah chapter number 6. Let's do this kind of quickly here. Revelation 4 and Isaiah 6. Isaiah 6. You know what? Because of time's sake, we're going to look at Revelation 4, but in your notes, just jot down Revelation 6 and specifically verse 3. It'll be a similar kind of a thing there. When John, in the book of Revelation, chapter number 4, is caught up into heaven, and he sees the throne of God, he's actually in the throne, literal physical throne room of God. He sees the Lord sitting on the throne and so forth, and he sees these four beasts that are surrounding the throne at verse 8. It says, "The four beasts had each of them six wings about him, and they were full of eyes within." Now here it is. "And they rest not day and night, saying," what? "Holy, holy, holy, Lord God Almighty, which was and is to come." See that? By the way, did you notice you've got the threefold repetition of threefold attributes? You've got holy, holy, holy. You've got Lord God Almighty. You've got which was and is to come. See that? When we are told that the Lord dwells between the cherubim, the most basic essential issue, in addition to everything else about Him, is that He is holy, holy, holy. And because He is holy, He is just and right. He is without iniquity. Okay? So when you go back then to Psalms 80 there, when you go back to Psalms chapter number 80, and they call for the Lord, give ear, O shepherd of Israel, thou that leadest Joseph like a flock, thou that dwellest between the cherubims," meaning you're holy, 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 and then they're asking them to shine forth. What do you suppose that might mean? Yes, what else? They're being destroyed by the Antichrist. They're being persecuted by the Antichrist. Darkness is ruling over the earth, and they're asking the Lord who dwells between the cherubim, who is holy, 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 manifest your holiness, shine forth and come and, you know, take what is rightfully yours, is kind of what's going on here. Shine forth, okay? Yes, go ahead.
I just have a wrong reference. I have Revelation
16,
but that's not what it says.
Oh, okay. It's Revelation 4. You mean about the holy, holy, holy? I might have given you the wrong one. It's Revelation 4, 8, and Isaiah 6. Was it 3? Yeah. Yeah, okay. And thanks for clarifying that. Okay, so now watch this. So they're asking the Lord to shine forth. If God was to manifest His Shekinah glory, what's going to happen to sin and rebellion? It's going to burn it up, okay? So now watch the next statement here. I'm back at Psalms 80, verse 2. He says, before Ephraim and Benjamin and Manasseh, stir up thy strength and come and save us. See that? So it's clearly, verse 1 and verse 2, clearly is beseeching God, shine forth, come and save us. Now what's significant? Why bring up this issue about Ephraim, Benjamin, and Manasseh? What happened to the rest of the 9 tribes? You've got Joseph mentioned in verse 1, you've got Ephraim and Manasseh mentioned in verse 2, but aren't Ephraim and Manasseh the descendants of Joseph? Right? So, wait a minute, what happened to the rest of the tribes here? No, not necessarily. How many of you recently remember reading through the book of Numbers? Those of you that are reading in the zone, you'll remember the book of Numbers, right? When God, I'm going to do this real quickly, but when God set up the camp, he would take, they were told to take and put that tabernacle right in the center, right? And then there would be 3 tribes that would dwell on this side, and 3 tribes that would dwell on this side, and 3 on this side, and then 3 on this side. And then Moses and Aaron were to dwell right in the front there, and then the Levites were there, here and there. So you had the priesthood that acted like a buffer between the tribes and the actual presence of God. Remember all that in the book? Right, you remember all that, right? Okay, all right. But when it was time for the ark of God, when it was time for God to move, when it was time for Israel to move, well, what happened is this, is that the Levites, in particular order and so forth, were supposed to go in and cover all the material and so forth. They would take down the tabernacle. And then certain of the tribes would go forward, and then certain of the tribes would go forward, and then right in the middle of that procession was the ark and the tabernacle and the furniture and so forth. And right in the middle of that was the glory of God. And guess who was next in line? Those 3 right there. It was these guys, verse 2. It was Ephraim, Benjamin, and Manasseh. That's who followed the ark as the ark went forward into the enemy territory in conquest and victory. And if you want some cross references of that, take these notes. Numbers chapter 2, verses 17 to 24. Numbers chapter 2, verses 17 to 24. And Numbers chapter 8, verses 10 through 22. That's the one. Let me just double check that. I hope I wrote that one down right there. That's the one I want you to look at. Let's see. Did I write that one down? I think I wrote that one down right. Wrong. Let's see here. It's Numbers 10. It's Numbers chapter 10 is what it is. Okay? Yes, instead of 8. The first one was correct. Numbers 2, 17 to 24. And then Numbers chapter 10. Numbers 10, they begin to move forward. They blow the trumpets. They gather together. And if you jump to verse 22, look over to verse 22. You've got... Verse 22 says, and the standard of the camp of the children of Ephraim, and if you were to go back to chapter 2, you found out that that consisted of Ephraim, Benjamin, and Manasseh. Okay? So they go forward, and then look what happens when the ark goes forward. Look at verse 34. Look at verse 34. And the cloud of the Lord was upon them by day when they went out of the camp. And it came to pass when the ark set forward that Moses said, Rise up, Lord, and let thine enemies be scattered, and let them that hate thee flee before thee. See, that's the picture that you've got, Psalms 80. Okay? When the Lord is to go forth before Ephraim, Benjamin, and Manasseh, it's because the Lord's going forth and He's scattering the enemies. All right. Anyway, that's just some other things to look at. Okay. Now, for purposes of the fact that we're running out of time here, okay, I am going to have you jump quickly to Psalms 83. Psalms 83. We're going to just have to move on quickly on those. Look how Psalms 82 ends. Look how Psalms 82 ends. What's the very last verse say? It says, "Arise, O God, judge the earth, for thou shalt inherit all nations." See how this section is flowing? It's flowing with the enemy thinking that they're going to rule the earth, but God arising and judging the earth, and He is, in fact, going to inherit all nations. So now watch Psalms 83. Again, a Psalm of Asaph. It says, yeah, we're going to slow down a little bit here. He says, "Keep not thou silence, O God. Hold not thy peace, and be not still, O God. For lo, thine enemies make a tumult. They that hate thee have lifted up the head." Now, when you lift up the head, what are you doing? You're really doing one of two things. You're either cutting somebody's head off, or what else are you doing? Exactly, you're exalting somebody. There's somebody in particular that they have lifted up. And not in the sense of cutting off the head. All right. Look at what has happened now at verse 3. "They have taken crafty counsel against thy people and consulted against..." Look at the next three words there. What's it say there? "Thy hidden ones." Ooh, who do you suppose that is? That's the remnant. That's that little remnant that fled to their hiding places. And so you've got a group that have taken counsel against the hidden ones. And if they've taken counsel against the hidden ones, that's going to give you a time sequence that you already, when this is going on, the specifics here, it's here in the middle of the tribulation period. Jerusalem's already been compassed about. The believing remnant saw that and they fled to hide in the wilderness. Okay? And yet those that are against them are taking counsel against even the hidden ones. They want to go get them. Exactly. Okay, so now watch what they say. "They have said," here's what the enemy has said, "Come, let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel may be no more in remembrance." By the way, you're hearing that today, aren't you? That's interesting, okay? Look at verse 5 now. Watch this. "For they have consulted together with one consent, they are confederate against thee." Now watch this. "The tabernacles of Edom and the Ishmaelites, of Moab and the Hagarenes, Gebal and Ammon, Amalek, the Philistines, with the inhabitants of Tyre, Asur," that's Assyria, "also is joined with them. They have holpen the children of Lot." And then stop and just think about what we just said. You clearly told them, verse 5, it's a confederacy. How big of a confederacy is this? How many nations were we just told? 10 is exactly right. Does anybody remember the prophecy in the book of Daniel, chapter number 2, that is actually spoken after this event, with the 10 toes? Remember that? And Daniel chapter 7, where it talks about this beast with 10 horns. Initially, those 10 horns have got 7 crowns and then 10 crowns. That's exactly what this is here. This is a prophecy by which you can actually, it's difficult for us to do right now, but by which you can act, the believing remnant is going to be actually able to identify the nations that represent the 10-toed kingdom of the Antichrist, the empire. This is the confederacy right here. Now let's take a moment and just talk about who these are. Does anybody remember who Edom is? Who's Edom? Yes, that's exactly right. That's the descendants of Esau. That's the Edomites. Esau is Edom. That's the Edomites. Well, who are the Ishmaelites? Who's that? That's Ishmael. Where'd they come from? Yes, that's true. But who did? Abraham with Hagar, right? Okay. And then who remembers who the Moabites are? That's the children of Lot. If you would, go, hold your place there and go back with me to the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 19 here. What did you say? Yeah, that's going to be, it was Sihon and Og. Those are the two kings, the Ammonites and so forth. Yes. No, not the Midianites. I think it was the Ammonites. I'd have to go back and just double check that. But look over here quickly to Exodus 19. Look at Exodus 19. Genesis 19. Sorry. Genesis 19. Watch this. You've got Lot. This is the account of Lot with his two... with not a good relationship here, okay? Look at Genesis 19, verse 36. 1936. It says, thus were both the daughters of Lot with child by their father. This is not a real good picture, right? The firstborn bare a son and called his name Moab, the same as the father of the Moabites unto this day. The younger, she also bare a son and called his name Ben-Ammi, the same is the father of the children of Ammon unto this day. There's your Ammonites, right? So you know who the Moabites are, and you know who the Ammonites are, right? Look at Genesis 36. You know who the Moabites are, you know who the Ammonites are. They were the descendants of Lot. Look at Genesis 36, verse 1. Genesis 36, verse 1. Now these are the generations of Esau, who is, what's it say there? Edom. And now if you'll look, I'm going to skip all ahead, jump down to verse 8. Look at Genesis 36:1. It says, now these are the generation of Esau, who is Edom. See that there? 36:1. And in same chapter, 36, verse 8, it says, thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Remember that. Whenever you see a prophecy against Mount Seir, it's against the Edomites, who are the descendants of Edom, who is Esau. That was at verse 8, 36:8 here. Genesis 36 and verse 8. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Now watch verse 9. And these are the generations of Esau, the father of the Edomites in Mount Seir. See how clear that is? Verse 19. These are the sons of Esau, who is Edom. Look at the very last verse of that same chapter. The last statement of verse 43. What's it say there? See that? He's the father of Edomites. So you know who the Edomites are. Okay, you know who the Edomites are. So quickly, if you would, go back to Psalms 83. All I'm trying to do here is just at least to a certain degree identify who these peoples are. All right, and then I've got something else I'll read here in just a moment from a particular author. It's kind of interesting. Anyway, okay, so you know who the Edomites are, you know who the Ishmaelites are, you know who the Moabites are. Look at verse 6. The next one is the Hagarenes. That one's kind of difficult to trace, I got to tell you. The best that I can figure, and it does seem to be concurred with some other sources, is that those are the descendants of the later descendants of Hagar. Yeah, and okay, Gibeah is a little bit difficult to trace as well. You know who the Ammonites are. We talked about that. You know who the Amalekites are. You've heard of the Philistines. Tyre, Asher, there's Assyria. And they've all joined themselves together. All right. Now, let me read something here real quick. This particular author says that when we try to identify these nations with modern countries, we run into difficulty. We do know that Assyria is the same as modern-day Iraq, and that's easy to identify, okay? The Ishmaelites descended from Abraham and Hagar. Hagar were the progenitors of the Arabs. We know that the Edomites and the Amalekites were descended from Esau, the Moabites and Ammonites from Lot, and so forth. So that's just some kind of interesting information there. Bottom line is this. When you look at these 10 nations that are identified here, and this is the confederacy that the Antichrist is going to use, on physically, geographically, where are they located? Where, say it loud. They're in the Middle East. You know, the 10 confederacy of nations that the Antichrist is going to use, it's not going to be South America, it's not going to be Australia, it's not going to be Brazil, it's not going to be Iceland or Greenland. For that matter, even the United States. All these countries here are countries that surround Jerusalem. They're over in that. What's that? We'll be funding them. Yeah, unfortunately, we already are. Okay? So this is kind of interesting. When you hear people say that the Antichrist is going to lead the European Union, that the Antichrist is going to lead the what do they call it? There's another term. NATO and stuff. There's another term that I'm completely escaping right now. But they say that the Antichrist is going to be the Pope or come out of Rome and he's going to lead the European common market. Maybe that's what it was, the European Union. None of these are them. See that? So it's the focus is wrong. The Antichrist is not the Pope. He's not going to come out of Rome. He's not going to come out of Great Britain and so forth. This is all over in the Middle East. Okay, all right, quickly now, let's move on. So watch what happens here. Look at verse 9. Some of you that are, those of you that are reading through your Bibles, you will have completed reading through the book of Numbers. I think, right? We're supposed to be, where are we supposed to be zone-wise? Ken, Dan, where are we supposed to be zone-wise today? Anybody know? Where are we supposed to be today? 1 Samuel 9? 1 Samuel, say, 9 through 12. Thanks, Mary. That was awesome, okay? So, you're already through the book of Numbers, right? Now watch this. This should bring up some recollection to you. So at verse 9, prior to this you had these nations confederate together to destroy Israel and cause them to cease from being a nation. This clearly is what the Antichrist is going to attempt to do in the latter days. So now the believing remnant says this, do unto them as unto the Midianites. Write down Numbers chapter 31. Write down Numbers chapter 31. And let's look at a passage here in Numbers chapter 31. Numbers chapter 31. This is in the days of Joshua. I'm sorry, it's not the days of Joshua at all yet. I mean, Joshua's alive at this point. He's just not ruling yet at this point. This is still under Moses' rule. The Lord tells Moses this. Numbers 31, and the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, avenge the children of Israel of the Midianites. Afterwards shalt thou be gathered unto thy people. And he gathers, watch how many people he gathers together. It says, and Moses spake unto the people, saying, arm some of yourselves unto war, and let them go against the Midianites, avenge the Lord of Midian. Of every tribe 1,000 throughout all the tribes of Israel shall you send to the war. Okay, so wait a minute. If you have 1,000 out of every tribe, how many do you have? Interesting. Okay. And there were delivered out of the thousands of Israel, 1,000 of every tribe, 12,000 armed for war. That's interesting, isn't it? Remember we said that what happens in the past is a small-scale future of some things out there in the future? Out there in the future, you have 144,000, 12,000 out of each tribe. That's kind of interesting. Well, so then go back with me to Psalms 83. You'll have to fill in those details, go back and go and see what they did to the Midianites. Because he clearly says here, do unto them as unto the Midianites. Next, look at the next phrase, Psalms 83:9. So do unto them as unto Sisera and to Jabin. But remember who those guys are? Who was that? What happened to Sisera? He got nailed by a woman, and it wasn't because she hitched him in marriage either, okay? He got them nailed by a woman, okay? You go back and read that over in the book of Judges, chapters 4 through 5. Jabin was the king of Canaan, and Sisera was his general, his five-star general. All right. Judges, chapters 4 and 5. Read both chapters, 4 and 5, and you're going to see about Jabin there. Joseph, go ahead with your question or comment.
Yes. And
Yes, she was. Yeah, yeah, okay. Okay, wait, say your first statement again. The Midianites preceded, they were already around before Moses was married to the Midianite woman. But she is of that lineage. Okay? Yeah. Abraham had married again. Yes, that's correct. That's correct. Yeah. I said Moses, it's Abraham. Yeah, it was after Moses, Abraham married again after Sarah died. Yes. Okay. All right. So you know who Sisera and Jabin were. And then it says, do unto them as to Sisera and Jabin at the brook of Kishon, which perished at Endor, they became as dung for the earth. Wow, what a future. Okay. Now, not only that, there's patterns in all this. He's saying, Lord, take that 10 confederacy nation and do to them like you did to the Midianites in the days of Moses. Do to them what you did to Sisera and Jabin in the days of Joshua and so forth. But not only that, look at verse 11. Make their nobles. Now who would the nobles be? Those are like kings and princes, right? It says, make their nobles like Oreb and Zeeb. Yea, all their princes like Zeba and Zalmunna. Well, who would ever name their kids those things anyway? Okay. Does anybody remember who these guys were? Oreb and Zeeb. Go with me, if you would, to the book of Judges now. Just in your notes, write down chapter 6 through 8. Chapter 6 through 8 in the book of Judges. And let's turn there real quickly. Look over to the book of Judges. Watch this. Let me just, in your notes, write down chapter 6 through 8, but I'm going to jump way ahead into the context here. Look at chapter 7. This is the days when Gideon is judging in Israel. Anybody remember what his other name is? Jerubbaal? Okay, who was Gideon? Jerubbaal. Chapter 7, 25. Chapter 7:25. Watch what Gideon does to these two guys. 7:25. It says, and they took two princes of the Midianites. Wait a minute. I thought the Midianites were utterly destroyed in the days of Moses. They weren't. And that was the problem. They came back. And they oppressed Israel again. But watch what happens, verse 25. And they took two princes of the Midianites, Oreb and Zeeb. There they are. And slew Oreb upon the rock of Oreb, and Zeeb they slew at the winepress of Zeeb, and pursued Midian, and brought the heads of Oreb and Zeeb to Gideon on the other side of Jordan. They slew these guys and decapitate them and name a rock after the one guy. Look over to chapter number 8. Now watch what happens to these two guys at verse 10. Now you've got Zeba and Zalmunna were in Karkor. These guys were the kings of the Midianites. The other guys were princes, so the next guys in line to rule. These guys were kings, okay? Long story short is they also get slaughtered. They also get slain, okay? Now, quickly go back to Psalms 83. Let's wrap this up. This is probably the most important point of all of this. Go back to Psalms 83. Watch this. So the prayer, the cry, is to destroy the enemies of God, and for their attempting to annihilate the nation of Israel out of history and out of existence. So look at verse 13. It says, O my God, make them like a wheel, one just rolls away, as the stubble before the wind, it gets burnt. As the fire burneth the wood, as the flame setteth mountains on fire, so persecute them with thy tempest and make them afraid with thy storm. That's the tribulation period there. Fill their faces with shame that they may seek thy name, O Lord. Let them be confounded and troubled forever. Yea, let them be put to shame and perish. Verse 18 is the point of the psalm. And look what it says here. This is key. You've got to get this. So, Lord, do all this. What's the very first word of verse 18? That here's the intention of doing all this. That men may know that thou, whose name alone is Jehovah, art the Most High over all the earth. You get the significance of that? Let me ask it a different way. What is it going to take for men to know that Jehovah God is the Most High over all the earth? It's going to take the destruction of the armies of the Antichrist, like He destroyed the Midianites, like He destroyed Oreb and Zeba, like He destroyed Zeba and Zalmunna and so forth. And until then, men are not going to agree that Jehovah God is the Most High over all the earth. That's what it's going to take. Understand that? That's what that prophecy is saying. It is absolutely going to take full-scale, utter destruction of the armies of the Antichrist before men will ever agree that Jehovah God is the Most High over all the earth. Isn't that amazing? That whole sequence of Psalms is just utterly incredible. Okay? And we're way out of time. All right? What's that? It is a parallel with our flesh, isn't it? Wow, sad to say, but true. You know. Okay, any questions, comments on that? I know that was a lot and very fast. But if you have any questions, you can come up and ask them. Okay, all right, we'll be dismissed. We'll start here again in about